right. Movie retrospective time once again. Going back to 1979, the one that kind of won the Patreon poll, even though it was a tie, but we already did Andromeda Strain on Matinee, because I said we were going to do them both. This is the 1979 When a Stranger Calls.
Yeah, I saw it on HBO.
Yeah.
Pookie jumped up here.
Yeah, Pookie's up here. Yeah. So if you see like a little butt wiggling, that's like her butt. Everybody knows what her butt looks like now.
I saw this and I remember that first scene, you know, with somebody calling her from inside the house. And that really stuck with me. The rest of the movie I forgot about. And
I think a lot of people have the same thing. Yeah. I did as well, because I saw this movie also when I was younger. And I think I saw it on cable. And man, that first 20 minutes with Carol Kane and like the guy calling, it's like, have you checked the children and stuff? That is fucking dynamite, right? Yeah. And I thought that was the whole movie.
Yeah, that should have been the whole movie.
It's not. Well, okay. So this is what ended up happening with this and why this movie ended up like that. So the writer-director, Fred Walton, well, he's the director and he's the co-writer. Like, the other co-writer was Steve Feek. I don't want to, like, you know, shaft anybody in that regard. But they had made, in the 70s, they had made a short film that was called The Sitter. And it was based on the very popular urban legend, which had been around for fucking decades, which also was taken advantage of in Black Christmas in 1974. The whole prank caller and then callers coming from inside the house, blah, blah, blah. So like I said, that wasn't a new concept. It had been done in the movies before. It was a very popular urban legend. But they made a short film that was called The Sitter that was about this urban legend. And it got so much publicity and like a really lot of people dug it. And it even got played like in, you know, before other movies and stuff. So it was kind of well regarded. And it was, you know, when I said it was really scary. So I guess after Halloween came out, John Carpenter's Halloween, obviously, from 1978, he was like, well, maybe we can take this same concept, because, you know, Halloween was originally called The Babysitter Murders, and, you know, flesh it out to a full-length film. So that's what they did. So basically, the thing about it, so the first time I saw this movie, the first 20 minutes of it, like with Carol Kane in the house and the guy calling, have you checked the children, all this other stuff, is that 20 minutes is probably one of the best like suspense, like creepy suspense sequences, like in any horror movie of that era. It's just so well done. The cinematography is amazing. Even though like this was like that cinematographer's like his first movie that he had done. And he actually went on to do much greater things as well. But so that's, I feel like that part of the movie is really iconic. And that people forget that there's other shit that happens in this movie after that. That's only the first 20 minutes of the movie.
Be honest, the rest of it's forgettable.
Sadly, it is. Yeah. I mean, the last act of it is good because it goes back to the original character. But all the stuff in the middle, it's not terrible because it's like it's got great actors in it. It's got fucking Charles Durning. It's got Colleen Dewhurst. It's got all this other kind of stuff. But I think it loses a lot of its narrative focus.
You could cut it all out and just put the end on there and it would wrap up pretty quickly in about half hour.
It probably would. Well, like I said, originally this was a short film.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That was just like the beginning part.
That's how I'd have done it.
Yeah.
Just, you know, gotta say.
Well, to be honest with you, that's pretty much the exact same opinion of most horror movie reviewers that I've seen.
Okay.
Well, I was watching one girl that had watched, she was doing a comparison because they did a remake of this in 2006.
But she got mad.
Yeah.
When I told her to stop. Stop doing that. Look at me. This is fucking tell me what to do.
Yeah.
And she's going to go right back to doing it. Okay. Go ahead. Do it then. Tear it up. I don't care, Pook. Go ahead.
But yeah, I mean, this, it did really well at the box office. But yeah, what I was saying was that I was watching this video of this girl that was younger. And she had watched the original from 1979, and they also did a remake of it in 2006. And she was like comparing and contrasting them. And she said pretty much what we said. She's like, the original, she's like, the first 20 minutes, dynamite. The middle part, the end, pretty good. She's like, so when after I watched it, she's like, I was kind of like, well, if it was me, I would have taken the part with the babysitter and made that the whole movie. Like, you could flesh it out, obviously. You'd have to make it movie length. She's like, but then I watched the remake from 2006, which essentially did that very thing. Like, they kind of took out most of the shit about Charles Durning, character, like, chasing the killer
the
or whatever.
The private eye stuff.
The private eye stuff.
Yeah.
They essentially took all of that out, but she's like, but they replaced it with more character development of the babysitter prior to her doing the babysitting gig. And she's like, and I'm not really sure I liked that either. She's
less
like,
is more a lot of time.
Yeah. And she said the same thing. She's like, in the original film, she's like, basically you learn everything you need to know about Carol Kane's character in just a couple of minutes, just from her, the way she talks, just from her body language, stuff like that.
She's the babysitter. What? There's a special babysitter?
Yeah.
Come on. Babysitter's a babysitter.
Well, I mean, like I said, the first one, they establish her character very efficiently. And I thought that was really well done. Just like with she was talking to her friend on the phone. It's like, you know, everything you need to know about her and stuff like that. So this girl was kind of like, well, I didn't really think, even though I thought that I wanted the whole movie to be about the babysitter and, you know, the first 20 minutes of the original film being the climax of the film. She's like, but that didn't really work either, because then they had to fill in too much stuff that you didn't care about, like about this character, you know what I mean?
You could have stretched the terrorism out a little bit longer so that he was messing with her for more. I would have done it so they were, she had seen him or maybe fought. What are you doing, Pope? Maybe she sees him a couple times. There's a couple of fights and a couple of chases inside the house before it ends. You can get another 15 minutes out of that. And then it ends, you know, with the cops killing him or something.
Well, the thing about it, I mean, there's a whole genre of movies nowadays, like in the last 10, 20 years, that are like home invasion horror that took the concept and made a whole movie out of it. And one of the ones I was thinking of was Mike Flanagan's Hush, which basically the whole thing was about like a hearing impaired woman. She couldn't hear anything.
Yeah.
And a dude stalking her while she was at a cabin all by herself. And that was the whole movie. And it was great.
Yep.
So it can be done. You just kind of have to know what you're doing. So I kind of feel like this suffered a little bit from the short film that they made being amazing. And then like the rest of it kind of suffers by comparison. And I hate saying that because I loved all the actors involved. It seemed like a good story on its own, but it almost seemed like the middle part of it was like a totally different movie.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? It's like it took two movies and mashed them together.
Yeah, because basically, like I said, the part everybody remembers from this movie is the first 20 minutes with Carol Kane, right? And then at the very end of that, the kids get killed and they catch the killer. And then in the next one, in the next segment, like in the second act, you get, it's 7 years later, and you get a thing where the father of the two kids that were killed hires Charles Durning, who was one of the detectives that worked on the case originally, but is now retired and is now a private investigator. He's like, basically, the dude that did this was in an asylum for 7 years, but then he escaped. So now he's running around loose. So the dad of the kids hires Charles Durning to go find the dude and also kind of like take care of him, if you know what I mean. And I don't mean like take him out on a date. I mean, whack that guy. So the whole middle part of the movie is the killer. Basically, he kind of gets out at first and then he's just, you know, he runs into this woman in a bar played by Colleen Dewhurst. And he's creepy, but he's not yet full on mad or homicidal, because I think one of the things they establish is that he was on meds when he was in the hospital. And it's like the longer he's out, like, you know, the meds are going to wear off. So the crazy is going to come back to the fore or whatever. So they have to like find him before then. So he kind of starts stalking Colleen Dewhurst's character. And then she kind of meets the detective and they kind of team up a little bit to find him. Although it seems like she says she's going to work with him and like, oh, I'll help you. And she does this one thing where she goes back to the bar where they met. And then he's supposed to, because he's like, oh, maybe the crazy guy will come there. But then he doesn't come there. And then she goes home and then he's in her apartment and then he runs away. And then you don't see Colleen Dewhurst's character anymore, which I thought was kind of weird, because I thought that they were just going to like team up like her and the detective. But that didn't happen. So then it's just kind of like this sort of cat and mouse thing where Charles Durning is trying to find him. So that's like the whole second act. And like I said, it does kind of drag a bit. And like I said, it's from like, seems like it's from a different movie. But then when it gets about 15, 20 minutes from the end, and this isn't a hugely long movie, I think it's only like an hour and 38 minutes or something like that. But then when you get to the third act, it actually gets better, because then Carol Kane comes back into the thing. And now she's 7 years older. Obviously she's married and she has two kids of her own. And at some point the crazy guy decides that he's going to stalk her again. And that final sequence is actually not as awesome as like the first part, but that final sequence is actually pretty good. Like, I like the part where she thinks somebody's in the house and she's freaking out and everything. And then she thinks everything's okay because the kids are okay. And then she goes back into the bed and then the dude is like in bed next to her. And like, that's like really freaky. Like, that's really good. But I feel, well, okay. One of the things I don't like, and I think I've talked about this before, I don't like when you overly explain or you overly humanize the villain necessarily. I mean, I'm not saying that's a bad thing in principle. I'm just saying that it's scarier if you don't know who he is. I think so. I think like the first part of the movie is so scary because you don't see him. All you see, you hear his creepy ass voice on the phone, and then you just see the silhouette like of the shadow, and then she freaks out. And that's like the end of that best sequence of the movie. But then when they show him just as a person, he's escaped from the hospital. He's kind of living in the streets and like, you know, living in homeless shelters and being weird and creeping on women in bars and stuff like that. And, you know, wigging out naked in front of a bathroom mirror. It's like, I'm not saying that that's not like great characterization and stuff. And, you know, but it's almost kind of like the movie's trying to make you feel bad for him. You know what I mean?
I kind of guess they were.
Maybe, but it's like, I didn't feel bad for him, though.
Yeah, it's not effective.
Because he tore two children up with his bare hands. It's like, if he was mentally ill and he couldn't help it, okay, fine. But, you know what I mean?
You don't want to take the mystery away. I mean, that's why, you know, Predator 1 and 2 were so good. You didn't know anything about these aliens, you know. Kind of like the less you know about them, the better. Same thing with Terminator. Less you know about the Terminator and the damn Skynet, the better. When you start telling the whole story, the mystery just falls apart. Same, that's the way all villains are. You should just know just enough.
Know just enough to make them compelling.
Yeah.
But honestly, and particularly as far as horror movies are concerned, like slasher movies, like these thriller stalkers, I think like the less information you give about the villain is probably the better. Yeah. I mean, maybe people have different opinions on that. I was just like doing a book review earlier about a book where some people didn't like, you know, oh, we don't know anything about the villain or anything like that. But I liked that because I thought it made it scarier because you can project your own shit onto it.
Best villain of all time, Darth Vader from the first three movies. When they started to give too much backstory about Darth Vader,
Well, I think that's why I think I brought this up before. It's like one of the reasons I really didn't like Rob Zombie's Halloween remake is because, you know, half of the movie, it seemed like at least, was, you know, Michael Myers as a kid, like being beat. It's like nobody wants to know that he's supposed to be the boogeyman, the shape. You're not supposed to know anything about him.
Yeah.
It's like you got just enough information about him in the original one. Yeah, he killed his sister when he was a kid. Then he went off to an asylum and then nobody knows anything about him since then. He just turns up in his boiler suit and his fucking William Shatner mask and it's creepy as shit. And I think that if they had kept the tone in When a Stranger Calls from the first 20 minutes and like extended through the, and I'm not saying that you couldn't jump ahead in time. You totally could. You could have him menace other people. There could be like a whole, I mean, like I said, there have been movies like this. But I just kind of feel like the whole middle part of, you know, the private investigator looking for him and intercutting that with this dude just like wandering around the city, you know, being homeless or whatever, it really like undercut his menace, I thought, because you could see him and he just seemed kind of pitiful more than scary. You know what I mean?
The only villain slash serial killer where they did the origin story and a bunch of details and where it worked was from Hannibal Lecter. But they did it the right way. I really liked Hannibal Rising. Fantastic movie, origin story for Hannibal Lecter. They never fully explored that character to the point where they just demystified him. He was always weird.
Yeah, it's, you really have to leave some mystery, like when you're doing a villain.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's maybe where, but like you said, had they, I mean, and it's really sad because the guy that played the killer, his name was Tony Beckley, I think. And this was actually, he died, like, I think only 6 months after this movie came out. He was really, really sick. He was actually really sick. I'm not sure if it was cancer or whatever, but he was really sick when he was filming this movie as well. And he died not too long after it came out. So it's like, and I'm not saying that the middle part was like bad performances or anything like that. I'm just saying that it seemed like two different types of movies that were kind of like mashed together. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, if you're going to do a sort of police procedural thriller, cat and mouse, you know, the detective catching a killer type of thing. That's also been done, and it's been done well. Obviously, it can be done, you know, very well if you know what you're doing. But I feel like this would have been better if it had been more concentrated on being like Halloween, you know what I mean? Like a more standard slasher movie where you don't really know anything about the villain. It's just this random ass dude that has decided to target you, has killed these two children, because that's great. I mean, this dude is in the house. He has killed two children that were sleeping in bed with his bare hands. And he's just like all covered with blood. No reason, no nothing. That's terrifying. If they had just stuck with that and not shown him, or at least shown him only in shadow, or just as like they did in Black Christmas, where you just see his eye, you know what I mean? And you didn't really know that dude's story either. Because like I said, I compare it to Black Christmas a little bit too, because that was kind of, that had a kind of, you know, the guy is calling from inside the house aspect as well. So, but I think that was done better in Black Christmas. But I can see why When a Stranger Calls is still kind of a cult classic. I think it's a cult classic on the back of that first 20 minutes, because those first 20 minutes are fucking great. I had forgotten how awesome all of the shots of the inside of that house are. Like when she's getting all the phone calls, I love all those fucking, I love the shots of just like the darkened house. Like there's a room back there, and then like you can hear her talking on the phone, like, but you can't see her. And it's just like, it's really, really good. Like I really like the unsettling vibe of it, and she really sells it, I think, like just this kind of vulnerable girl that's like all by herself in this house that she's not familiar with. And I think everybody can relate to that, so it's really scary. But I don't know, it just seemed like I said, it seemed like two different movies, which
yeah,
kind of, and I had totally forgotten that it was like that. I thought the whole thing was like
it was a hodgepodge, just like they mashed some stuff together. Some good stuff and some okay stuff. I already said what I'm going to say about the movie. I mean, yeah, you guys know my opinion of it. Is it worth watching? Nah.
Well, it depends. I mean, I think...
You're trying to learn something maybe about film.
Yeah. Like I said, I think for that first 20 minutes alone, and like the last act is good too. I liked the last act also, but it's just, I just felt like it didn't need the middle part. Yeah. I saw another reviewer on this and he said a pretty astute thing. He was like, okay, I feel like this was like the first 20 minutes was like its own movie. And then the middle part was almost kind of like this other, so like the middle part and the end part was almost like a sequel, but it was all in one movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which I thought was pretty astute. They did actually make a sequel to this called When a Stranger Calls Back, which I think I saw, but I can't really remember much about it. I don't even know if Carol Kane was in the sequel or not. But as I said, they did a remake of it, and I heard it was decent because they did actually focus more on the babysitter, and they focused on that, you know, that scenario more than like adding all of this weird detective stuff in there. But in a lot of ways that didn't really work either, but for different reasons.
Yeah, I didn't like it. I thought it was just totally inconsistent.
It is.
Really good first 20 minutes, and then the main body of the story is kind of a meandering private eye type movie that is not really all that compelling. But then it leads up to a final confrontation that was pretty good. But I think it had been more effective had they gotten rid of the middle part
and followed her character the whole time.
And just jammed it like that, and it would have been fine. But it would have been short. It's just totally inconsistent. I think it's a good example of how you can mix some excellent stuff together with some mediocre stuff and have the whole thing fail because of it. You know, that's what I think you can learn from the movie.
I mean, as I said, you can watch the first 20 minutes on its own just as a great horror movie a standalone. You don't need the rest of the stuff necessarily. No. Or you can just kind of skip all the stuff in the middle because it's not really all that important. And like I said, I think it was kind of a mistake to show the killer like as a character, just as a normal guy, even though obviously he would be in real life.
Well, you know, what's funny is that first 20 minutes, I thought, because I'd saw it a long time ago as a kid around the same, I thought that was part of Maniac.
Really?
Yeah. That was the guy who kept cutting people's hair off.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I thought that was in Maniac.
William Lustig. Yeah.
I had kind of merged them together.
We should do Maniac one of these days. I keep thinking.
Maniac was pretty good from what I remember.
Yeah. I heard the remake was okay too, but I haven't seen the remake, but I like the original a lot.
When I saw it, I was like, oh, this is going to be good. I remember this, but I was thinking of Maniac. And no.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, those are two different movies. But yeah, he was the one that was scalping people.
Scalping people and taking
pictures. It's real sleazy.
Yeah, real sleazy. I thought it was that movie.
Yeah. But this one, I mean, it is the first 20 minutes are so iconic that you know, the movie Scream, the Wes Craven movie, the first part of that movie is actually an homage to this movie. You know what I mean? Where Sydney, like played by Drew Barrymore, gets the phone call and all that kind of stuff. He was like homaging this. But as I said, it's just that first 20 minutes is so good that I had completely forgotten that wasn't the whole movie because I hadn't seen it in such a long time. So like when I'm watching, I'm like, wait, 7 years later, what's going on now? But like I said, I kind of feel like had you taken the detective stuff. And like I said, no shit. I'm not shitting on Charles Durning or, you know, anybody that was in the middle part of the film. Cause it was all like, it had the dude that played Superfly in there too.
Yeah.
He was like one, he had kind of a bit part, but, you know, nothing against it, cause the acting was good and stuff like that. It just seemed like it wandered in from another movie. I feel like it should have concentrated. You could skip ahead 7 years, but I think it should have concentrated on Carol Kane's character the whole time. Cause you could have totally fleshed that out. You could have even fleshed out the killer's backstory. Although I think in this instance that probably would have been a mistake. I think it was better to keep him ambiguous and to keep his motive unclear, or him not having a motive, because like I said, I think that's a lot scarier.
He's also not intimidating looking. They should have had a guy that was big like Jason or Michael Myers. He just is not very an intimidating looking guy. He's somebody you could whip his ass pretty easily.
Well, he did get his ass whipped.
Got his ass whipped regularly, yeah.
When he got out.
Right.
And like I said, in a way it almost seems weirdly like we were almost supposed to feel sorry for him, because, you know, the first thing he does, he escapes from the bar or whatever, and he doesn't have any, or escapes from the asylum, and he gets out, and then he goes to this bar and starts creeping on a woman, and then this other dude comes up and kicks his ass, and I'm just kind of like, I don't know, I felt like the movie was trying to get me to feel sorry for him. I'm like, yeah, I don't. He deserved to get his ass beat. Mm. Like, quit creeping on people. But, you know, I know he couldn't help it, but, you know, it was just kind of like, okay. But yeah, I just really feel like there's a kernel of a great movie in there. But it's just, they didn't quite know what direction to take it. So it almost seemed like they couldn't decide on a genre.
I don't think they had seen enough examples of what was possible.
Maybe not. Yeah. You know what I mean? And like I said, the middle part could totally be in a different movie about a different thing. Cause I've seen other movies like that.
That middle part wasn't cheap, man. They spent money doing that shit and the acting in it was good. And they bought, you know, they could have kept that shit real simple and gone the route of Halloween or something and had a fantastic movie, but it hit.
Well, this actually was a hit. This cost $1.5 million to make, and it made over $20
million. Okay, so, well, big money.
Which is why they made a sequel a couple of years later. Although, like I said, I don't remember anything about the sequel.
And they just kept going like that first 20 minutes. It would have been like Halloween. It would have been great.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I mean, John Carpenter did it with Halloween. I mean, that's kind of what this movie, that's why, you know, Fred Walton got the idea to expand his short film into a longer film because of the success of Halloween. He's like, oh, I can make something like that.
Yeah.
We just have to flesh it out to movie length. It's just, I don't think he really knew how to consistently stay within that same genre because it seemed like a couple different movies going on at the same time.
Yeah.
Which is a shame. Because like I said, the bookends of this movie are good. And then like the middle part, it just didn't need to be in there.
And when you see the villain, he's not real intimidating looking. The shit that he does isn't very intimidating. They didn't really know how to deliver on that, you know, compared to Michael Myers. Oh fuck, man. Come on.
Well,
Jason. Oh,
well, yeah. And the reason why those are scary and the reason why the first 20 minutes of this is scary is you don't see them.
Yeah.
I mean, there are masks on or you just see the shadow. That's like way fucking scarier than just seeing a dude.
And then
when
you do see them, they actually are frightening looking.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? In Jason and in Halloween, you're like, oh, okay. Yeah. You're dealing with a pretty big dude. He's got a fucking machete and a mask and a bag on his head or something. You know what I mean? Yeah, that's
fucked up. Which, you would shit your pants if you saw that in real life.
Yeah, retarded ass redneck coming at you with one eye sticking out. You know? That's some scary shit. It's like something about a Chainsaw Massacre. You know what I mean? That's probably where they got that idea. You know, just some old motherfucker from living out in the woods coming at you with a machete.
Machete or a chainsaw or an axe. It's dark
outside. There's no fucking street lights out there. For you people living up in the hood, street lights won't save you. They're not out there. Camp Crystal Lake. They know how to, it's, you know, we watched that shit in the summer when you're fucking Mississippi and you're afraid to look out the window at night when you were watching that shit. Don't look out the window.
Yeah, because you never know.
You might be standing out there. Might see somebody looking back at you.
I've still think about that every now and then, because, like, you know, because you usually leave, like, the curtains on the sliding glass door open, and every now and then, like, and you can see out there because of the moon and everything.
Yeah, it's moon, yeah.
So it's like every now and then, like, if I wake up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom, like, I wonder what I would do if I if somebody was just, like, standing there looking at it. And I'd be like,
yeah, well, that's what Jason and that's what Jason and Michael Myers were all about. It was dark out there.
Yeah, so they're just going to stand there and look at you and, like, creep your ass out.
Yeah, standing out there in coveralls and shit. Work boots.
And nothing good ever comes in coveralls. You standing outside looking at your coveralls.
He's wearing coveralls or some kind of fucking overalls or jumpsuit or something like that, you're fucked.
Yeah.
And he's got dirty ass fucking leather boots and work gloves or something and a bag on his head. Yeah, you're fucked.
Because he's obviously out for mischief.
Yeah.
Although I'm not saying that it would be any better to see a dude in a three-piece suit standing outside your window looking creepily in at you. But
that might be James Bond, though.
That's true. That might be cooler.
That might be James Bond. You don't know. Now you just tell
potential
that, you know,
stalkers take note.
Some dude just dressed in farm clothes, you know, that's just more effective.
Yeah, because he's gonna like fucking he's gonna do some slaughtering.
Yeah, that's he can right. just run through a plate glass window, not get too cut up, and just in there and look at you. Got a bag on his head. It's just gonna. They knew that was a much better recipe to get you to fear the villain.
Yeah.
Than what they showed in this. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, as I said, they seem to have, you know, they seem to have it down pat in the beginning part, like, because that was the short film.
You don't see him.
Because you don't see him. And that was scary as shit.
When you hear the voice, because I hadn't seen him in a long time, I forgot what the thing looked like. I pictured a guy in wearing all black with, like, a black turtleneck and a big old fucking kitchen knife and some kind of a mask, you know what I mean? Like a white skull mask or something. What it sounds like.
Which, like I said, Hush was kind of like that. Yeah, he had, like, a black beanie, and like then he had, like, a white mask.
Yeah, or, like, one of those black fucking IRA fucking hood,
a balaclava.
Yeah, a balaclava, like something you see from the IRA or, you know, from the Troubles shit, you know, looking at you, but it's all black, you know.
That'd be, like Mr. Cruel or, like, you know.
That's what you're picturing.
D'Angelo.
What you really see is this wimpy little fucking dude, curly hair, and just...
He's got creepy eyes and he's creepy, but he's more like pathetic than intimidating.
He does not exude physical power.
Which, like I said, it's almost kind of like, because they tell you later, you don't see it happen, but they do tell you later that how he killed the kids was he basically tore them apart with his bare hands, and which, you know, that's horrific. But when you see him, he doesn't look like somebody that would do that. I mean, they were trying to like make him seem like he was so crazy that he was just like had, you know.
He looks like a dude that
insane strength.
He actually looks like a dude that creep up on the girls and jerk off on the bus.
Yeah, yeah. Which is creepy in its own right. I'm not saying that. But he doesn't look like the type of dude that would tear kids apart with his
bare hands. Looks like the type of guy to get his ass kicked by a girl.
He did kind of. And I feel kind of... Like I said, he had creepy eyes. And there was like some really effective sequences. Like, I like the scene, even in the middle part, like where... you know, where he's in Colleen Dewhurst's apartment and like, you know, like you just see the kind of door open and he's in there. And like I said, the last part of the movie where he's actually in Carol Kane's house with the husband and everything. And like, she hears somebody like talking from the closet or whatever. And then he's really like in bed with her and stuff. That part's great. But, you know, so he's kind of creepy then because he seems like a crazy person, and you can put yourself into that mindset. It's like, what if you were in bed and you thought your husband was there and then it was just this crazy guy? It wouldn't matter if he was big or not. It's like there's some fucking random ass crazy stranger in your bed, which is you know, scary enough on its own. But yeah, I think the middle part of the movie kind of just brought home the fact that he wasn't a very intimidating presence. It just made him seem like a pitiful, mentally ill man, which when I mean, you wanted him to be scary because that was kind of like that's where you thought the movie was going for. So it almost wanted to be a slasher movie and a police procedural at the same time, and it didn't really work out.
Fuck all this. I want to see Terror Train again.
You know, I think that Amazon Prime added that not too long ago.
We're gonna see Terror Train.
Maybe we can do that as well. That can be one of our reviews. No problem. All right, so that will do it for our movie retrospective today for When a Stranger Calls, 1979. It's actually on Amazon Prime, as is the remake, if you want to check. I don't know if the sequel is. But yeah, check them out. Like I said, the first 20 minutes, fantastic, iconic. You know, I feel like everybody, even if you haven't seen the movie, like, you know about the first 20 minutes of this movie because they're great. The rest of it, you know, it's all right. But, you know, but I feel like you probably should see at least the first 20 minutes if you're a horror fan at all. But yeah, so that'll do it for this review, and we will see you guys on the next one. Bye.